It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to a Good Friday edition of the Access of Easy podcast. This is the audio sidekick to the newsletter. You can get it at accessofeasy.com. All the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And this is number 343. My name is Joey. His name is Len. Buddy, what's going on over there? How are you?
It's good, man. It's a good Friday. You know, waking up to see another Friday, how could you say it's bad, right? It could be a heck of a lot worse. I think it's a good time to reflect on how good we all have it.
Yeah,
to be honest, I guess it could be so much worse, but the reality is we have it pretty good. At least a lot of us do. And we should all just look back and reflect at things that are pretty darn good for us. And yeah, how are things over there with you?
I'm with you. Busy, man. I can hear my wife stomping around with my dog upstairs. We woke up late this morning. I didn't get out of bed until like 6:45. And so I got up and saw little inside baseball. Usually I get up around 6:15 with a dog. He tries to wake us up, but today I was, you know, ignored the whining or whatever. Woke up and he brought in a bunch of shoes. There's like four different shoes sitting in the bedroom. It's what he does. When he's not happy about something, he just brings shoes around the house. So he's probably getting ready for his first walk of the day here pretty soon. But
how many pairs of shoes do you have? I'm embarrassed to say I got a ton.
I got a ton too. I mean, I think because you and I both play sports, and I would guess both of us are kind of deal hunters. So I keep an eye on like shoes that I want. And then when they go on sale, I snap them up. And even if I don't wear them, you know, for a year, they're still around. So
yeah,
I got a lot of shoes, but I got like, I would guess more than 20 pairs.
Honestly, I'm around 20-ish, and I have a lot of backups. So I have backups, and I have backups for backups.
Is this an Italian thing? Like, I know my old man is like this too. Like, if I ever have to go like look around the second floor of my childhood home, I see like boxes of shoes that are untouched. Like, they're probably like relics at this point, years old.
I'll still wear them even if they're relics. Maybe it is an Italian thing. And the thing is, the shoes I wear them until they're done. There's nothing left.
Same.
And I still keep them because when I do gardening and stuff, it's a good shoe to
this is exactly the cycle that I'm in. I'm in the same thing. Like, they become, I have a pair of shoes next to my lawnmower in the garage. Because those are the ones I wear to cut the grass.
You gotta have some, you know, some gardening shoes. I have tons, and I wear them in like the shoes I currently wear, they're ripping apart. I don't care. I'm still gonna wear them as much 100% as possible
till the sole breaks. Right, the sole is the thing that has to keep strong. If the sole rips or tears, then
I wear out the soles on a lot of shoes.
I
actually just wear it out, and I've worn out to the point where they go through, and then it's done.
That's the time. Yeah, that's the time. Anyway,
what do you do with an old shoe? By the way,
I throw them in the garbage. I throw them in the garbage, but I think now that Moose is a big shoe guy, like my first dog Scoop wasn't a shoe guy at all. So this guy likes shoes. Maybe I'll keep him around. I don't know. I really am not sure. I guess I'll find out when I lose a pair.
Some peanut butter on it.
I don't know about that, but maybe I'll just like, you know, let him tear it up for a bit. Anyway, last week's
access
quote.
Of easy time.
Yeah, the battle. Access of shoes over here. Last week's quote, the battle against socialism is more than the attempt to replace economic error by economic truth. It is a battle for moral and spiritual values. It is precisely socialism which promotes universal dependency on the state and the neglect of all primary duties. That was by the Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher. So big congrats to Paul on that one. That's a banger quote. This week's quote, what lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies inside of you. I am 100% sure that was in the running for my high school graduation yearbook quote when I chose mine. I'm pretty sure I ended up choosing if you're not living close enough to the edge, you're taking up too much space or something like that. Like ultimate cringe stuff. Anyway,
let's not pick anything from the Iron Sheik. You
were gonna nothing from the Iron Lady, nothing from the Iron Sheik. Anyway, if you know this week's quote, put it in the comments. No Googling, no cheating. You guys know the deal. Don't pervert the process. And if you win your next domain or hosting renewal on EasyDNS, which is nice. We just paid for CanadianBitcoiners.com. I think it was like $80 or $85. I don't remember it being that much the first time. Did it go up in price? We got to talk to Mark here. What's going on with the cost of domains?
For 12 months? I guess that's typically the going rate. I don't know.
I have no idea. I don't remember what we paid last time. But anyway, neither here nor there. Where do you want to start? We got five stories today. Some of them pretty
six.
Good here.
No, no. There's a sixth story that's been thrown in. Yes, and it's just more of a FYI, because Mark, Jeftovich, was on the he was on Robert Breedlove's show not too long ago. He was traveling, and he was in Miami. And while there, he was able to get in touch, or at least it was already prearranged that he would be able to get involved and get on the What Is Money show. I heard it shortly after it was released. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I, to be perfectly honest, I don't think I've heard more than two or three of Breedlove shows in total. So for me to actually go out of my way to listen to it, it goes to show how much I like Mark. And it's a good episode for people who want to listen and learn a little bit more about the history of Mark and also Easy DNS, because he talked about when he started and also the fact that he's trying to also bring in DNS into somehow incorporate that into Bitcoin somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Domain names into Bitcoin somehow. Because domain names if you could somehow tie it into something that cannot be removed and it's always tied, this would be a good thing, but then transferring it is going to be an issue in the future. But either way, check it out. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, because, you know, again, I'm not much of a Breedlove guy. I'm not sure if you are, but I had to take a listen to this one.
I listened to it. Listen, I like Mark. It's funny. I have hung out with Mark in person five times, something like that, over the year or so we've known each other, a little over a year we've known each other. And every time I talk to him, he talks about DNS on Bitcoin. So it is very much, as he says, a white whale for him. I like that episode for a couple reasons. One, because I think Mark thinks the same way we do about Bitcoin, money, and maybe most importantly, this kind of creeping state Leviathan that continues to get bigger and bigger and where Bitcoin fits in there, right? As far as the the episode itself, I recommend people listen. It's not that long. And as much as I like some of Breedlove stuff, sometimes I think he gets a little too he's a little too like mimetic in what he says. He's always got the sound bites and the clips and the quotes from stuff in the past, which, you know, it's not my cup of tea all the time. But this one's a lot of Mark, which I like. You know, if you're gonna have a guest on, you may as well let the guests do their thing and tell you what they think and give you their point of view, which was good. Outside of Mark's episode, you haven't listened to the Sailor Breedlove series?
No,
it's worth it.
Again, I haven't listened to much of Breedlove.
Yeah. If you ever find yourself on the driving range or something and you want to bring your headphones, I recommend it. It's long. There's I think four episodes, maybe, or five. I forget. But it's really good. It's like a reminder and kind of almost a primer for people who are asking themselves about Bitcoin and money for the first time. It was pretty good. It's like 2 years old at this point now, or maybe a little over a year and a half old, but maybe even longer than that. I forget now. Everything is kind of flying by, but it's worth your time if you haven't listened to it already.
Yeah, check it out. It's called What Is Money Show. This is with respect to Mark's appearance on Robert Breedlove. So if you haven't listened to it, take a look. It's available on wherever you listen to podcasts. Just check What Is Money, or just type Robert Breedlove. He'll come up. It's one of the last episodes he did. So we're recording this as of March 29th. So
yeah, I think it is the most recent episode on the feed.
Yeah. So depending on when you're listening or watching this video, it could not be the latest episode. So check around March 29th. It was earlier this week. So I think it was around 25, 26.
It's episode. Oh, I have to show the archived episodes here. It is episode 448. So it's actually, there's three new episodes since then. So 448 is the one that Mark did.
He's a busy guy, Robert.
Very, very.
Yeah. Well, anyways, let's move on to Spain, because what's going on there is interesting. Is apparently a Spanish high court has suspended an already issued order by a court to block Telegram. So the courts decided to block Telegram, and a higher court just said, no, suspend this order. Because what's going on right now is the court is investigating claims that Telegram is allowing users to upload copyrighted content without permission. So that's really why the judge suspended Telegram services within Spain. But then they requested a report on the impact of the suspension that it would have on users. And the court is waiting for, it's incredible they're waiting for this, but it's a police report before deciding whether to enforce the suspension. I'm not sure why a police report is required in this, but anyways. So what is going on here are media companies, they're arguing that Telegram is infringing on copyrights. So they're saying people are sending out some copyrighted content and they're getting angry about that. And Telegram themselves, they have not commented on these allegations as of yet. And for those people who want to continue using Telegram, they're arguing that the ban is unfair, and creators who and the people that rely on copyright protection, it's unfair for them too. So you got two sides. You got the people wanting to use Telegram, copy the people that the creators are saying that they want to be able to use it and enforce the copyright protections. But really, this is just something, what can Telegram do? You know, how are they able, why are they able to enforce this? This is not, shouldn't be them. They're setting up a service that people can use, and ultimately it's the people themselves that are able to use the service. And if they're going to say that they're sharing copyright and it should be closing this thing, let's be honest, copyrighted material is shared on everything from YouTube to emails, websites,
messages, you name it.
So yeah, so where does this stop? At what point does this stop? Are they even going to stop transmitting people using CB radios when they hear a copyrighted song in the background? So then we're stuck with nothing that we can use. So this is, if I'm looking at this through, you know, as a third party, I'm looking at this is strange that they would have initially banned it. And now I can understand why the courts have.
Well, okay, hang on a minute. Why do you think it's strange? Because in my opinion, like, I'm looking at this and saying, I mean, you and me talk about this all the time on this show and on CBP. There's a thin veil of legitimacy here vis-a-vis copyright law, but everyone knows why they want to ban Telegram. It's not a mystery, right? So, I mean, the question is really, is the Spanish population going to stand for this? Yes or no?
I don't know. I think that they'll just migrate if forced to something else. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how prevalent Telegram is to people's lives within Spain, and alternatives do exist. But the argument I have, though, is if they're going to, if the courts are going to be deciding that this is the hill they're going to be dying on, Telegram is doing something wrong because of the users, then you can't just stop at Telegram. You got to continually moving forward, because there are other services that are doing the exact same thing, and you should be applying those very same laws or those very same rulings to them as well. But what happens if you continually do that? Ultimately, people will have nothing, or they'll go to an extremely privacy-focused type system that prevents them from being blocked. Something like Signal, Keat, you name it, that just that has no identity attached to you, and it's a peer-to-peer service, and good luck stopping a peer-to-peer service. So all this is really, this is just a slow-moving ship here trying to fight something which should not be fought or cannot be fought. Telegram, I'll be honest, I think it's somewhat centralized, right? It's truly not peer-to-peer. It's peer-to-peer when you do individual messages, but when you're in group chats, it's not. It's server-based.
That's my understanding,
So yeah, if that's the case, then they could do this to Telegram, but come on, people are just going to migrate to something else. And there's so many options out there. Good luck to Spain for doing this.
This story ties in a little bit with the YouTube story that's in the newsletter as well. But just to keep it on Telegram for now, the thing about doing something like this is that you wind up getting this kind of like steroided up Streisand effect. And everyone knows what the Streisand effect is. If you don't talk about something, it kind of, you know, toils in semi-obscurity. But as soon as you start talking about it or trying to tell people not to use it, everyone wants to know what it is. Telegram is an interesting case, because what you're seeing here is, you know, if let's take the government at their word here, the Spanish government at their word, which we shouldn't, but we will for this story. If it truly is about sharing copyrighted material, people who are sharing copyrighted material are doing so because there's some kind of monetary or reputational value to that, whether it's in these personal channels where they can solicit donations or whatever, or in DMs where they want to share stuff that's beneficial to their cause or protest or, you know, whatever. Who knows what the story is? But these people have the most to gain by continuing to do these things. The average Spanish user doesn't care whether they're using Telegram or Signal or text message or WhatsApp. They don't care. And so what you're going to find now is the people who are most competent and who have the biggest followings, the ones who will be targeted by this, will move to other more secure platforms. Like you mentioned, Keat, Signal, Session, maybe like some of these Bitcoin / Satoshi fueled or funded ones. And then you drag a bunch of people who otherwise would never have found these platforms onto these new, better, more private, more resilient platforms. It's just that it's a fool's errand to go this route by any government. And the Spanish government, in my view, I could be naive on this, but they don't have the tools at their disposal that someone like the US NSA has at their disposal, or even the Canadian government has at their disposal to enforce something like this. it's a mistake. And you put it very well there, that they're kind of a cruise liner just batting down much more agile attackers, and there's just not much they can do. It's only a matter of time until there's, you know, holes in the hull, as it were.
Let's not talk about that type of analogy because of what happened.
Jeez, right? Too soon. Okay.
It might be. Google, and you were just mentioning this because this was the next story, because something with YouTube and Google is going on, because online surveillance is a big issue, or at least it should be a big issue for people. And I'm not sure why they're not making a bigger stink of this, because the legal system is trying to deal with some tension between national security and individual privacy. Look, we live in a digital age, and a lot of people are using the internet for a variety of different reasons, for work, for pleasure, for everything. And so individual security or privacy is a big thing, and sometimes it gets encroached. And there's a recent court order that's compels Google to reveal the identity of users who watch specific YouTube videos.
It's insane.
And this is raising concerns about potential mass surveillance by law enforcement. And the blanket order, and this is pretty messed up because it transcends reasonable suspicion, requiring identification of all users, irrespective of their motives. So if you are watching something or anything, that even if something you enjoy watching, and you have, for example, you like watching gun videos, you may not be a gun owner, you may not even want to fire a gun, but you have an interest in guns. By watching this, maybe this puts you under the eye of these people. So it's kind of like, this whole thing is a scenario that's similar to geofencing warrants that indiscriminately attack everyone within a designated area. And this is something that people are saying, this is against the Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures. And I can understand that. So I can't believe they're going ahead with this. The only thing I would suggest is there's really only one way to protect yourself, is you got to use a VPN, and you can't watch videos with an account. You got to watch it through a browser like Tor that you never logged on to Google, and you're going to watch YouTube that way. It's very restrictive. It'd be very slow and cumbersome, but that's the only way you could ensure, or at least maximize, the potential protection you have against these people claiming or tying that video watching to you. Because let's be honest, everybody watches stuff that's all over the place. Shoot, even if you watch a video about ISIS, does it mean you're an ISIS supporter or you like ISIS? No, you can watch anything, and it could somehow twist and tie that and say that you're doing something wrong and use that against you. This is pretty messed up, and we're trending in the wrong direction.
Let's tie this into the law that's making its way through Canadian legislative chambers right now about whether or not you are likely to commit a quote unquote hate based crime on the internet related to speech. If you share this data about who's watching what videos, and you like there's three elements here that are all coming up at the same time. I don't think we covered the list of undesirable channels that came up maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago from some agency or think tank or whatever in the United States, but you know, there's this list of channels that they published, this list of YouTube channels, included on the list, by the way, places like TFTC, right? A Bitcoin channel, basically, that covers Bitcoin, the economy, and some other stuff, a lot like CBP, honestly, although maybe a little sharper in edge. But if you pair like that list, which is not static, could always expand, with this directive to share or unmask otherwise anonymous data about viewers of certain videos from certain channels, and then you add the Canadian, you know, C18 or C11, I forget which one it is, the online harms bill, where anyone who's considered likely to commit a crime can be detained, put under house arrest, otherwise punished. What kind of algorithm ghetto do you find yourself in as like an average citizen? I think it's pretty severe. And I would say that these things together really work well to create a chilling effect. People just won't watch videos that they're worried are going to influence their, you know, their opaque scoring inside of these, you know, federal government bodies here or in the United States or anywhere. And self-censorship and this chilling effect leads to less open internet. Like, that's the whole point of the internet, is to have kind of a free place to express yourself and find like-minded people. it may not always be the most savory content, but everyone's got a different opinion of what savory is, right? Consider the Palestine versus Israel thing. Everyone's got a different opinion of what savory is in that. Consider gun ownership, like you mentioned. That's a great example. Everyone's got a different opinion of what savory is. Consider stuff like whether or not the currency is in free fall and failing and you should get out and into Bitcoin or not. Everyone's got a different opinion on that. But certainly in all those cases, there is one point of view that the government may view as more favorable to an outcome that they desire. And if you're on the other side of that, you're going to wind up in a little bit of hot water. I don't like this at all, then. This is really, really concerning to me. And I think this is a major signpost on the road to serfdom here. You just can't have this. It's completely unpalatable, and I think completely unreasonable.
Well, another person that's still in hot water is Julian Assange, because there's a recent court hearing in the UK, and it's putting his extradition to the US on hold. And Assange, I think everybody knows who he is, but he's the founder of WikiLeaks, and it's a website that publishes classified information, and the US is accusing him of espionage for publishing classified military and diplomatic documents. And so Assange supporters believe that the U.S. charges are an indirect attack on journalism and the freedom of the press. And the argument is being made that journalists should be protected if they decide to publish classified information, especially if it exposes wrongdoing or war crimes. That's an interesting point of view. And the U.K. court, right now, they're still trying to make a decision. They haven't yet made it on his extradition, but they ordered the United States to provide more guarantees about how Assange would be treated in prison if he were to be extradited. And this shows that the court has potential concerns about mistreatment if he ever goes into U.S. custody. I'll be honest, on this one, I'm kind of torn on both sides. I could see both sides of the fence. But I don't know which side is more correct. I want to hear your thoughts on this. I never really talked too much about Assange, and I never really thought too much about it for whatever reason, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, I think that for me, how about this? Okay. These guys sign treaties and declarations at the international law level on things like war crimes and what's allowed during, you know, a period of engagement and how to treat prisoners and how to do all these things. We've seen this many times. And actually, I remember in the later years of my poli-sci degree, getting in spats with professors over this idea that international law was like this real thing. It's clearly not. It's clearly this sort of faux veil under which states with most of the power can dictate terms to states with less power during times of war. And I think this Assange thing kind of lends itself to that same line of thinking where, yeah, we aren't allowed to do certain things, but we're going to do them anyway. And the real penalty is if you expose us for doing them, not for doing the things themselves. It's disappointing, but isn't it also true, Len, that like the U.S. has sort of made a living on, especially in the last like 4 or 5 years, has sort of made a living on calling out other countries for supposed atrocities and supposed missteps and using those same missteps to justify invasions and occupations and war and other forms of engagement. Assange released the same level of info. The problem is that it came at a time when I think the U.S. was really panicked about the idea of some, you know, freelance rogue journalism outfit, WikiLeaks, being able to post stuff to the internet that was really hard hitting. Everyone at this point has seen, for example, the US military helicopter footage of the two guys kind of bullshitting back and forth while taking down what looks to be like families in some Middle Eastern country from a decade or two ago at this point. But everyone remembers that clip. And I think the U.S. panicked and said, we have to set a standard here, legal or otherwise, that everyone else is going to have to look at before they decide to publish stuff like this. And Assange really took the fall for that. Because if you look at the same sort of independent media landscape since then, what other times has a leak like that ever hit the wire? There hasn't been one. And so they've been somewhat successful in that regard. to your, you know, to your question, I guess, about like what I think about Assange still being in prison, still being strung along. You know, if you had to bet, Len, who would spend more time in jail, SBF or Assange, where would you put your money?
Assange, by a country mile.
Same. And so that tells you all you need to know, right? You have a guy who broke domestic U.S. laws, ripped off people to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. Maybe not hundreds of billions, but, you know, nearly three-figure billions. Lied about it. Continues to not show any remorse, continues to try and play this card that he's a victim and a, maybe even a Christ-like figure in all this. Completely insane. He got 25 years. He'll probably serve a handful of them before he goes to some federal resort type jail to serve out the last bit of the sentence and then leave early. Meanwhile, Assange has been behind bars or running from the law for 20 years now at this point, right? Something like that. So, I mean, it's not even hard to figure this out. Everyone knows where the priorities are when it comes to the U.S. government, specifically the military-industrial complex. Just sad state of affairs. But like I always say on this show and on CBP, it's disappointing, but it's not surprising.
Some would make an argument that the two are different. See, SPF was, no matter how much
they're, it is, they're still different, like a white for collar. Sure. Yeah, they're different for sure. But like, come on. What is the more severe crime by the letter of the law?
Well,
this is the
thing, I don't want to debate right? that part. I just wanted to just state one thing, that the U.S. has always been, and it's not just them. I'm sure everybody throughout history that has these tools available to them, use them. They weaponized, and they have been weaponizing the U.S. dollar, right? And by doing that, they're able to push whatever narrative they want. They could strong arm their opponents into whatever situation they want to be strong armed into. So that gives them a lot of leverage. So even that too, and we all see it's happening. We may not be all calling it out, but it's prevalent. So they've been doing this for a long time. They're the biggest fish in this pond.
Yeah.
And because of that, they have a lot of the privileges that come along with it. I'm not to say that that's right. It's just
reality. It is a state of affairs, right? Yeah. I don't know. It's this kind of stuff is something to keep an eye on. Again, like in the same vein as stuff like banning Telegram. And the same vein as stuff like who's watching what videos, all this stuff is connected. And I'm not a big tinfoil hat guy, but you'd have a hard time convincing me that there's not some coordinated effort here to crack down all over the world on things that are in the same vein as far as information sharing and freedom of thought that's, you know, considered to be on the fringe. I mean, you and I wouldn't consider Bitcoin, for example, to be on the fringe or copyrighted material to be on the fringe, but I think some major governments would. So it's all, you know, it's all coming up Milhouse for that side of things right now. And it's, you know, concerning. It's raising flags for me for sure.
Now, the U.S. government, they're also taking a strong stance against some cryptocurrency firms that allegedly have been aiding Russia with dodging sanctions that were imposed in response to the war that they have with Ukraine. And the U.S. suspect that these firms are providing Russia with the means to continuing financing their war. Now, it's not the fact that they have lots of energy that they're able to parlay. This is one of the big means that it's funding the war. So this move, they're trying to disrupt these activities. The U.S. Treasury Department, the Office of Foreign Assets Control, they've imposed sanctions on 13 different organizations and two individuals believed to be involved. Mm-hmm. And these sanctions, they include specific blockchain and virtual currency firms that have collaborated with Russian banks that have allegedly designated by to be sanctioned. And of course, it's going around that. So they list these entities. I don't like MasterChain. Atomase, like there's a whole bunch of names I have never heard. Can't even pronounce. I'd rather see Milhouse listed here. That'd be pretty cool. But and even list a couple of banks. And it's hard for me to one I can pronounce, VTB Bank. So these are some of the banks. Anyways, they're saying that they're involved with the transfer of digital asset funds and getting around sanctions. And the U.S. they're doing whatever they can to try to cripple Russia and their ability to exploit some of these digital currencies or digital assets as a loophole. But the reality is it's hard because while they may not be totally decentralized, they operate in a somewhat decentralized world. Something like Bitcoin, good luck trying to stop that. But with this stuff, this is, you know, they're fighting a losing battle with trying to do the whack-a-mole here. And you know, I don't think that this is something that's really helping significantly fund their war efforts.
Oh.
Let's be honest. The Russian economy is not built on the trading and selling of digital assets.
Not built on low liquidity shitcoin sales? I thought for sure that was what was funding the war machine. But Nancy Pelosi and Liz Warren told me that was the case, Len.
We'd have to investigate this further because they're two reputable sources. And if... I'll be honest. If Pelosi was saying anything to do with finances, we have to take that.
I want to know what token she's buying to, get on the right side of this trade. We got to find out.
Yeah. There's not much else to say. This is pretty low level stuff here. Good luck to the United States for trying to stop this. This is something that, like I mentioned, it's not making a big dent or it's not going to help out the Russian economy tremendously. It may help out a little bit, but that's. I'm just being, very generous here, but the reality is a lot of this, they have no control and they're just going to continually play whack-a-mole and it's going to be just a game of catch-up for them.
Yes. Fact check true on all those things. I'm not even going to add anything. It's just a list of, companies. It's good. Good luck. A sign maybe of what's to come in terms of Bitcoin and crypto regulation. It's a losing effort for sure.
And last story we have is about the Apple M-series chips, and researchers have discovered a security flaw in the Apple M1, M2, and M3 chip. And the flaw is within the architecture of the chips themselves. So it cannot be patched with a software update. And this means that Apple will eventually have to release new chips that fix the problem. These chips are not used in iPhones or iPads. That's generally the majority of products that people use that are Apple. So these are chips that are used in MacBook Airs, Pros, Mac Minis, and so forth. And starting from 2020, I believe, is when they started using these chips. The good news from all this is that this vulnerability is difficult and time-consuming to exploit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still, you have to take measures to mitigate yourself. They're saying that you have to always install the latest updates. Now, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to impact because if this is a security hole on the hardware side of things, but either way, that's still a good thing you should be doing. Always install the latest updates that are available to you. But this goes to show you that every chip out there, no matter how secure, with enough time and effort, they could be hacked. It's just how much resources you have to put into it, how much time you have to put into it. There is nothing out there that is secure. There's no OS that is secure. There's no piece of hardware that's secure. Eventually, they could all get hacked. All you have to do is just make sure you're trying to mitigate any attack vectors and practice good privacy hygiene. If you're not doing it and you're relying on chips and software to do it for you solely just based on updates and what the manufacturer is saying, good luck. You're going to be wrecked in the long run. This is an opportunity for you to do the right thing. Practice good privacy hygiene. This is the way forward.
Yeah, it's funny in terms of undesirable videos I might be watching. I do have an affinity for these iPhone repair shops where they break into old iPhones or new iPhones via this special piece of software and hardware hack where they basically remove the limit on passcodes and just let the thing run overnight. So to your point, there's only so much security you can get from a mobile device. It's a consumer facing retail product. The sacrifices and the trade-offs there should be obvious to people. But as you mentioned, staying up to date and making sure that you don't, have this phone with ancient software on it, ancient software that's going to leave you vulnerable is a good idea. Other good idea, don't lose your phone. If you lose your phone, you got to imagine that all that data is up for grabs. So that's pretty key. You could always do the remote wipe, thankfully, on iPhones. But leave something to be desired here for sure. Let's see what Apple comes up with, right? They're new.
Oh, they'll update the chips.
Chips, yeah, but the chips are, that's another 9 months, right? Or 10 months here. So
I don't know. This is something I have no answer to.
They release usually, Len, in September, their phones. So you got to figure the next round of phones. And the next round of phones.
It's not the phones, though. This is for MacBook Airs.
No, I know. And I'm just saying that's the cycle they're on. So I think the MacBook Airs are probably around the same, right? I would guess. I don't know exactly, but
if there's a security vulnerability, and I don't want to, I'm not an Apple simp by any means. I don't have any Apple products.
Yeah.
But I think that if this was known and if they knew this before this was released, they're probably working hard behind the scenes to develop a way to fix it and to not really change much of the manufacturing process and just basically issue a new chip that's been updated that closes this loophole. And then so new products that are sold have these new chips. Maybe they're probably going to offer the older chips out there or a trade-in, or you could bring it in and you could swap chips.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, what would you do with the older models, right? Not much you can do to fix those. People paid good money for those things, especially like the MacBook Airs, MacBook Pros. You're talking $5,000 for a MacBook Pro laptop, I'm pretty sure. So
yeah, and customer support from Apple is generally deemed to be top-notch. I'm not sure if
that's... It's really good. It is really good.
So yeah, then you would imagine they're going to go to whatever means necessary to rectify this for those users and make them whole. So
for what it's worth, I was a heavy Apple investor, like, you know, almost six figures in Apple stock in the last 2 years. And I have zero Apple stock today. None. Make of that what you will. I'm one data point, but looking at the company, the leadership, the kind of stagnant, you know, more and more stories like this, I ended up buying a bunch of iBit instead and dispersing that money other places in my TFSA. I want to see what they do to innovate next, right? They need a big innovation. I don't know where it's going to come from, but candy bar phones and, you know, these sort of high speed laptops. You know, you and me agree on this. As far as the phones, I have an iPhone, but on the computer side, you know, we just bought, CBP just bought this like video rig computer. It was like $2,000. For the same firepower in a Mac, you'd be paying triple the price. And I just have a hard time understanding why anyone would do that. And then you factor in stories like this and you're like, man, you know, I'm paying all this money and now I have a chip that's not secure. I have a problem, right? Windows is supposed to be the unsecure operating system. Here I am on the hardware side. I can't guarantee that the stuff is secure. You gotta think about, you know what I mean? They're heading the wrong direction in a lot of ways. Honestly, I hate to say that as an iPhone guy and a, you know, former Mac guy, but hard to argue, isn't it?
I can't say. You must know somebody close to you that's into artist, like, is it graphic artist?
My wife is a graphic artist. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I didn't want to say it.
She's in the Mac ecosystem, big time. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, didn't she have any input as to say those types of computers and that operating system is better for that type of environment? Like, things get rendered faster, things get done. I don't know. This is outside my realm of expertise.
Yeah.
And again, I'm far from an Apple.
You honestly couldn't convince me. And I think if I could convince my wife to try a Windows machine, she'd never go back. But that's just my opinion. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we don't buy Windows machines for her job. Her employer provides her with whatever Macs she needs. Yeah, so it's an uphill battle. Not that I'm even having a battle with her, but, you know, if I was going to, I would say, like, look at the speed this thing has and the firepower this thing has. Plus, look how it lights up. Super cool. Anyway, that's it for Access of Easy 343. Take care of yourselves until next time, and happy Easter. Enjoy the weekend with friends, family, and have some good food, too.
Yeah, have a good Friday and an even better Sunday.